Welcome back to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. We are here at the Aspen Food and Wine Classic, the 40th anniversary here in 2023. And we're having a blast. This is the first day. We've been here for about 24 hours. We've had some incredible wines, some amazing food. And we want to talk about the blind tasting competition show that we are doing. I have Claire Copey here, who is hosting that show. And we're going to talk Aspen. This is day one. And if anybody listening has been to Aspen, you know it's quite a scene. It's quite a thing. It's overwhelming. Some of the best wines you can possibly have are put in your face. Some of the greatest meals. It's a whole show.
It's a whirlwind. Like you said, it's just overwhelming, the amount of great wine, great food, and really cool people. People that I've looked up to for years that all of a sudden you get to share a glass of wine with, share a meal with. Like, how amazing is that?
It's also like a high school reunion, though, in a way. I mean, every person that you've ever worked with in wine, food, whatever, they're all here, and everybody's going 100 miles a minute.
Oh, absolutely.
It is a wild experience. So what I want to do is I want to get into some of the best wines we've had so far, some of the best meals we've had, and then I also want to talk about this blind tasting competition, which is coming to SOMTV very soon, and why it's special. So let's first start with Aspen itself.
Mm.
Okay, look. This is the greatest people watching that exists. I'm just going to say it flat out.
Well, it's like another planet. Like, this place is so freaking beautiful. It's like, am I on planet Earth right now?
Yeah.
It's just too perfect.
It's really good. Everybody is, everyone's dressed very nicely.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really understand how there's a big trend with hats.
So many hats. So many beautiful felt fedoras and wool hats. Like, I feel out of place not having one.
And last year, it was, what was the dog everybody had?
Ray Isle, when we were on the gondola, he said the new trend in dogs was Burmese Mountain Dogs that year. But I believe this year, for the 40th anniversary, people have gone to the doodle.
The doodle. I love that. It's a wine podcast. We want to give you the trends of dogs and hats here in Aspen.
We're merging with the American Kennel Club.
Absolutely.
You heard it here first.
Claire, what's the best wine you've had so far? We've been to several parties. We've filmed quite a bit.
And that's the craziest thing. We've been here for like 24 hours, right? And I already can't decide what the best wine we've had is. We were fortunate enough to go to a Maya Kamas party tasting last night. So, like, you know, wheels down from our plane, get to the hotel, quickly change to look presentable, and then immediately be drinking, you know, cellared, bottle-aged Maya Kamas in large format bottles. So we had the 86 Pinot Noir, which they don't make Pinot Noir anymore, and that's freaking gorgeous.
Yeah,
Holy moly.
That's my wine. That's the best wine. It was out of a Magnum. It was really good.
So good.
It's an incredible. I'm pretty sure that about a quarter of the white Burgundy in the entire country is here in Aspen right now, not to mention Champagne. It's pretty much all white Burgundy and Champagne, but that's.
They're burning through that right now.
They are.
Bless them.
Bless them. Bless them.
We had a lovely Pouligny Marché for dinner as well last night, and that was.
That's right.
Delightful.
I think what made the 86. Pinot so special was that it was in perfect shape. It's really, we get to drink a lot of great wines and we talk about them on this pod, but I will say this goes above and beyond, because whenever you can get a wine that comes right out of the cellar of a winery, from a historic winery like that, that's my number one.
That's so special. It's easy. I feel like it's easy in Aspen to be like, oh my God, I'm so tired, and you just get burned out so fast. But then you have to take a moment and just look back and be like, we are so damn lucky to do what we do and to be here.
Yeah. I don't know. This beer I'm having is pretty good, too.
The beer is amazing.
That's my second favorite
wine. This is my favorite wine.
that I've had on the trip from an exhausting standpoint. So what we're doing here is we are filming a competition. We have a show called Blind Tasting Sessions. You subscribers are very well aware of this. We made a decision to do it as a little bit of a tournament. And Claire has been here looking for some of the most interesting and blind tasting specialists in Aspen.
Mm-hmm.
But the twist is we're trying to blind taste bubbles, and sparkling wine is not exactly easy to blind taste. Why is that, Claire?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of factors to that. I mean, if you look at any organization that offers certification for sommeliers, you know, all the quartermaster sommeliers, the WSET, there's a blind tasting portion. What wine is never in that portion of the exam? Sparkling wines. Because there is such a thin margin of differential between a lot of these wines. The effervescence, of course, you know, affects it as well. And there's just such a huge range of these wines. You have all these non-vintage blends that are variable year to year, and some regions that don't declare vintages year to year. So there's just all of these factors and all these variables with sparkling wines that make it really, really difficult. And frankly, also like, yeah, you have all these old world countries that are doing traditional method, Champagne, Franciacorta, but now you have the new world that's doing a bunch of traditional method as well. And they're kind of answering the old world and stepping up to that bar that's so high. And it's really hard to tell the difference between those.
I found it interesting. So we'll get into kind of the people we're looking for this thing and who we found, but I find it interesting. The people we've talked to so far and who have been a part of this little tournament we're doing, they've always said, we don't blind taste sparkling wine for work ever. It's always for pleasure. It's always for celebration. It's always like you turn your brain off and you're like,
I'm drinking sparkling. It's like drinking a nice beer sometimes. You know, it's just like, this is easy. This is pleasurable. I don't want to get too cerebral with this. It's just fun.
So not only are we taking people who are like already so occupied, they're running to seminars, they're going to parties, they're probably half buzzed when they walk into the room.
They have to be.
But we're also saying you have to do like the most difficult thing in the world.
Also, let's look at all the grapes that go into making sparkling wines across the world. There's so many different variables. It's not like, okay, this is Barolo. It can only be made with Nebbiolo. It's, you know, could be freaking anything when you go to all these different regions.
So who are you looking for? Who do we want in this tasting competition?
I'm looking for a bunch of different people from different paths in the wine and food world. I'm not just looking for people that are super comfortable with blind tasting. Yes, we're looking for sommeliers working the floors at some of these top tier restaurants, but I'm looking at chefs who drink a lot of wine by nature, but maybe aren't blind tasting regularly or at all. I'm looking at wine writers. We're looking at people who own and run restaurants, people who are in the wine world and adjacent to it and, you know, rub elbows and bump shoulders with it all the time. Did I just mix up those phrases, bump elbows and rub shoulders? We want people that are around wine a lot, but not necessarily saturated with it, because it is such a huge challenge for anybody, even sommeliers who blind taste regularly, because they're not blinding sparkling. But we want to get people from all different paths of the food and wine industry.
My favorite thing, though, is all these people, they all drink sparkling wine.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big difference. Like, if you put, like, a Carmenere from Chile in front of somebody, certain people are studying that or might drink it for some reason, but a lot of people just don't. And so if you're like, hey, is this a Carmenere, or is this a Merlot, or is this a Cab, or is this a whatever, people freak out.
They don't drink enough of it to know what the typicity is, right?
But when you say it's sparkling wine, they go, well, shit, I drink a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I have never thought about it this way. And that's why this is so freaking interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And today already we've had a bunch of drama with this. So I'm excited. This will be coming to Somm TV pretty soon. And
it's pretty diabolical.
It's kind of mean. It is mean, but it's also like part of like the...
We're having fun.
Let's do it. Yeah. I mean, let's do it. All right. So Claire, what are your thoughts on the simple question of like, can sparkling wine actually be blind tasted? Is this something that can actually be done, whether it's worth doing or not? Can it be done?
Absolutely. Of course. There's a lot of... there's a lot of variables in the sparkling world. I mean, first and foremost, you have what grapes are you using? Because certain grapes have certain profiles just by nature. They're more floral, they're more aromatic, they're more neutral. And then you can get into how is this wine made? That's, I think, probably one of the biggest factors. Of course, where in the world is it made as well? But how is it made? Is this a traditional method, champenoise method, where the secondary fermentation is all happening in that bottle? You know, you add the yeast and the sugar to your still base wine, whether it's a blend or a single vintage. And then all of those bubbles are being created in that bottle. And you've got all these dead yeast cells sitting in the neck of the bottle, giving wonderful texture, wonderful flavors and aromas to this finished wine that just set it apart. Or are you using the tank method, the Charmat method, which is a little bit less laborious, a little bit cheaper? And it's a lot of primary notes. You don't get quite as much of a rich texture or rich palate. It's a little more lean and clean. You know, that stainless steel, very clean.
Bubbles are totally different in that method.
They are. They absolutely are. But there's a huge range of all of these different wines, even within those methods. And I think, like, especially like Prosecco, because we're going to be looking at some Proseccos in this challenge. Prosecco, and I've been guilty of it, kind of gets written off. It's like, well, this is a trash sparkling wine, right? Like, it's just so easy to make. And we see some, like, really big producers making a ton of it. But in the case of what we're going to be looking at with our competition show here, we're using a couple of Santa Margarita's Proseccos, which they're famous for Pinot Grigio, right? But they've been making Prosecco for way longer.
Like 50 years. I mean, some of this stuff's actually single vineyard, really serious.
They're single vineyard, single village. They've been aging them on these, albeit in the tanks, and they're using tanks that are laid out horizontally. They're not those vertical tanks because they want to give it more lees contact like you'd find in a barrel, in a bottle. So they want that texture on the Prosecco. And honestly, it blew my mind. When I got to taste this wine, blew my mind. Prosecco can be good.
All right. Just to play devil's advocate here, most of the Prosecco is not that. So the Prosecco we have, it's a large company that makes it, but it's small production. It's not
correct.
Big. You can't find this at the grocery store, but for
some of it, you can't find in the U.S.
I know.
Unfortunately, yeah. That's the shitty part of it, right?
Yeah.
People need to drink this wine, but it's hard to get in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, is it good with orange juice?
That's up to you. You drink your wine how you want to drink it. I don't think I'd take the single village one.
No, you are absolutely right. The Prosecco in this competition is fantastic. It really is.
It really is.
Also why it's so heart blinding, because I think people's preconceived notions of what Prosecco is goes into this and screws them up. And that's why this has been really fun to watch.
It is. It's really fun to watch. And I would probably struggle with it too, especially when you have a couple traditional methods, sparkling wines next to each other. And with climate change, like regions, it's changed up so much, even with still wines. Like you don't taste a ton of difference between sometimes like just a baseline, you know, village Bourgogne and a Santa Rita Hills Pinot Noir. Like somebody's going to call me out for that. I know it.
But, you might deserve that, but
no,
but no,
for village level. Come on.
I think what this is showing though, is that the new world, as whatever that means nowadays, but like, you know, not champagne. So wines outside of champagne that are in North America, South America, Australia, wherever else, it's astounding how good of a quality it is. And once you remove the, like, I know what's in this glass, people are, you know, they're just like, this is champagne because it tastes yeasty.
That's so true.
And that's really...
When you take that label away from them and that preconception.
There's an Oregon wine that we have pouring in this that, honestly, I think is going to be the one that screws everybody up. And we've seen a little bit of that. And I don't want to give spoilers to the show because it's pretty funny. But, I mean, it's a big game changer as far as the way sparkling wine has been made. And it's... I mean, champagne always rises to the occasion. Champagne is champagne.
Yes.
That being said, it's astounding how good bubbles are from all around the entire world right now.
Absolutely.
When I think about the biggest challenge for me, it's kind of the wine is made twice. And I think that this is why nobody does this, because it's really not picking classic styles of this wine. I don't know how, you know, when we sat down and we were like, how do we find a portfolio of sparkling wines that's going to work in a classic style? That's not easy. I actually don't think there is a classic style of anything. I mean, even champagne. Region to region, village to village, there are a lot of little differences and blind tasting against those places. It's not like...
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
People who are Burgundy aficionados, and Burgundy to me is one of the most labyrinthian, complex places in the world from a blind tasting standpoint. There are plenty of people who can go, this is Cote de Beaune, this is Marsanne, this is... And they know how to do it, and they really can, and it's finite. Yeah. I don't know that that exists in Champagne. I don't know that that exists in... It certainly does not exist from like California to Oregon to Washington to Australia.
Yeah, I would say maybe Champagne's got more of a microscope on it, especially when you go like, you know, the Cote de Blanc versus Marne Valley style.
So all Chardonnay, versus like Pinot heavy stuff.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think the attention, the microscope's been really focused in on these new world traditional method sparklings quite as much. They're still pretty up and coming and new. But it is really fun when you do taste them alongside, say, like a Franciacorta, a region that's been doing this for thousands of years. And it's like, you stepped up. You're pretty dang good. You're pretty damn comparable to that.
So, Claire, is it fair, though, considering the fact there's so many grapes often in these wines? I mean, we're talking about Prosecco. That's like, not many people have heard of the grape Glera. You know, that's what, up to 85% or more of what's in
Yes, correct.
Okay, so how do you choose a bunch of sparkling wines when they're not the same grape? I mean, it's like, to blind taste, all right, we're going to blind taste reds. You're like, okay, this is a Rhone. You know what the blends are.
Yeah.
You're aware of like, this is mostly going to be Syrah, or this is mostly going to be Grenache or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an extreme example. Mostly it's like, okay, this is Cab. So, how is it fair to do this?
Most people may not know the name of the grape, but they're consuming it and they're very familiar with it. They just don't know how to name it. And it's an indigenous variety.
Is that going to go up against something like traditional Pinot and Chardonnay, which we'll get into. This is more information. This is more information than we've given the contestants on this show. 100%. Like, people listening to the podcast are getting a better rundown than the people who are actually doing this.
The guests should know. The people doing the competition, they don't need an extra leg up.
That's fair. They're like winemakers and somms.
They're
fine. Know
they're going to be okay.
Yeah, fair.
All right. I mean, go up against, that's hard. Most people are going to say no. Like, who can go up against Chardonnay and Pinot Noir? But I think it's very, I respect Prosecco for using an indigenous grape to that region and letting it shine and letting it be typical of that region and of what that area is capable of, instead of going to a grape from France.
So going back to just the method, where do you draw the line? Any Pet Nat? Is it any sparkling?
Yeah, why not? Heck yeah.
But don't you think, I mean, a Pet Nat is pretty easy to pick out.
Well, yeah. I mean, for the sake of the competition, we're not going to do a Pet Nat. There's not going to be something with chunks floating in it that it's like, I bet this is the Franchia Corta. We're not going to do that. We're going to try to make it a little more difficult. Get some wines that are a little similar to each other or could throw a wrench into their process of deciding which wine is which.
Is anybody going to mistake a Prosecco for a secondary fermentation wine?
Probably not. To be honest, I mean, like, I feel like that's the one that, and I don't know, like, we haven't really gotten to go through the whole process yet. Maybe I'm wrong, because when it comes to blind tasting, yeah, like, if you're just sitting drinking the wines, you're like, well, obviously that's a Prosecco. But when you start blind tasting, you get in your freaking head and you start playing games with yourself. And I could totally see somebody sabotaging themselves mm-hmm. and getting in their heads about this. But generally, no, Prosecco is pretty Prosecco. Like, even if it is this, you know, very intentful, single village, beautiful Prosecco, it's going to be more primary notes, more floral notes, and it's still not going to have quite the amount of texture and, like, unctuousness and richness that you're going to get from a traditional method wine.
So if you have something that's secondary fermentation, maybe a tiny bit of age, what notes are they going to get on that?
You're going to get a lot more of the yeastiness, the nuttiness, some mushroom notes, a little bit more tertiary savory notes.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the primary fruit notes, not just the florality, but this lovely savoriness and this wonderful texture.
And what about a wine that is all Chardonnay? You talked about the Cote de Blanc in Champagne. What's the difference between that and using mostly Pinot Noir?
It's going to be leaner. It's going to be more of those yellow fruits, green fruits, citrus. Very zesty, very bright, very mineral, very precise, potentially leaner. And then when you start getting into Pinot Noir, you get a little more fruit, a little more broadness, more of the savoriness.
This is evil. This is evil.
It is, but you can totally second guess yourself. There are a couple of wines here. There's particularly one wine that we have that's more Pinot Noir heavy, but it tastes leaner than another wine that's more Chardonnay heavy. And that also comes down to differences in residual sugar. That's probably one of the biggest parts of this competition is the residual sugar levels. That's going to differentiate a lot of these wines.
I wish so much we could talk about the thing we've come up with for the second round. People get to the second round. And
we're so mean. Like, this first round is adorable and cute and fluffy, but we're about to, like, mess up some people's lives. No, we're not. But it's rude.
It's pretty we're planning. Bad. Yeah, it's pretty tough. Well, for anybody who actually pulls this off, we're giving away a 6 liter of Cottle Bosco Francia Corta. There's like five in the country of these bottles that are made, or five in the world that were made. And so whoever does win this, you know, they can bring in like 20 of their friends, or I don't know if it's you and I, probably just us, to drink a 6 liter. I mean, it's incredibly rare to find a sparkling wine of that size. So, hey, look, you know, I would say it's worth it. This is going to be fun.
Heck yeah, it's worth it. 6 liters of beautiful Francia Corta. Let's go.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this evil situation plays out. And, lots to come from Aspen Food & Wine Classic. Go to SomTV.com. There's a chance for all of you looking for a Father's Day gift last second. Go to SomTV.com and use the code 50OFF, 50OFF, and you can get 50% off an entire year of SomTV, and you can watch the show upcoming. Lots of new stuff. The Oyster Farmer is now streaming there, our new film. Go to SomTV.com. All right, everybody, be safe.